consider the instrument unit as a stage? What is the instrument?
A non-propulsive stage.
A non-propulsive stage.
That's my own opinion.
Bob Brown coined a good phrase. It is the brain of the shaft.
Okay.
That's the way he referred to it quite often.
Okay.
But, and you can always get that debate. There's a project office for the IU, just like there's a state project office. And you look at that, but of course, they have no propulsion system.
We had five folks.
We didn't have any detanking problems if you had to scrub.
There's another question I've got now, and again, I'm getting into the same murky waters as the origin, I guess, of the maglev chassis, and this is the ST-124 itself. Were there Marshall concepts? Did Marshall give the plans to Bendix and say, here, build me an ST-124? How did that come about?
They didn't give them the plans. Bendix people are packaging experts in platform design. They built the ST-120 that's still flying in Persian, and the ST-124 evolved from that to some extent. But Marshall was also, Marshall in the form of ABMA was involved in the development of the Persian. I'd have to say that Marshall was very actively involved in the design of the 124. And when I say design, I'm talking about basic concept of what it will do, that it will have dual prism alignment to allow you to maintain a reference and drive your platform to any firing azimuth, as opposed to the way the ballistic missiles had to be aligned and shoot right over San Juan. Those were things that were all concepts, I think, that will work together with Bendix, but Marshall had a very heavy hand in designing the 124. But when they went into production and Bendix got the contract, then Bendix had the job of actually packaging that concept into the hardware, which they did. But if you look at an ST-124 platform and go down to the museum, look at an SG-66 platform that flew in the V-2, you'll be amazed. So the SG-66 wasn't designed by Bendix, but some of the people that worked on the SG-66 also worked on the SD-124.
Yes.
So I'd have to say that...
we designed it.
It was.
Back at the old SD-80, the SD-90, and the LED-3.
I was going to say it in the left three, as I recall. So
Luther, the point I'm trying to make is that when you talk design, I'm talking about basic concept. But when you get into packaging, Bendix guy may have come up with a good idea about how the servo end should operate.
But even the packaging is very similar to the V2.
But I'm saying, if you go look at that old SG-66 and then look at an ST-124, it really strikes you as being strange to see the two sitting there, one of 1930-something and one of 1960.
You can't see much improvement on a good thing.
What's the difference between the ST-124 and the ST-124M?
Well, the ST-124-1 and -2 were the first 124 platforms built, and they flew in the Block 1 or Saturn 1 vehicle. It was a predecessor to the -M, and the M only means modified. But the platform that flew in Saturn 1 had a redundant pitch gimbal built in. The yaw and roll were 360 degrees of freedom, and pitch was limited to 20 degrees, but it had a redundant gimbal that had its own servo loop that was then programmed as you had to pitch over. So they changed this in the -M to make yaw the axis that was limited to plus or minus 45 degrees. And then the other two axes had 360. So that gave you full freedom in pitch, which is helpful when you're in orbit, you know, and you're maintaining the attitude of the vehicle. You just rotate around the platform. like the dash one and dash two that go in pattern one, you're constantly having the program that's done together. So there was a difference. It was just updated and modified to the present configuration, and all and those blew in 201, 501, so.
Okay, again, now thinking about the structure of the ST-124 and the computer chassis. They are both integrated cooled, right?
Yes, in a little different form. The DADC actually had drill passages within the mag lift to allow the coolant to flow through the body of the system. Mm-hmm. And the 124, the way they adapted it was to form the covers, such that the covers on the ball had coolant passages through them. The actual frame of the platform has no coolant through it.
I never understood that.
The covers, see that you can see the lines there? It was formed by taking two layers and putting graphite in, and you press these together and then blew it up, actually inflated it. And that's the way the coolant passages were made, and there's one on each side.
Yeah.
So the frame of the platform system, which is beryllium, did not have coolant passages. It would have been real difficult to do that like it was done in the EADC because it's not a symmetrical box. So
right. Okay, and why? Beryllium is lighter than the mag lift, correct?
Yeah, it's strong, too. It has very, very stable, has high strength. But it has that toxicity problem.
That's why I'm trying to find out why they made the decision to go with beryllium in one case and not in the other one.
Well, one reason is you had two different groups of people working.
That's probably the best reason.
And I think I don't know how that fits, but I think that has a lot to do with it.
So the beryllium decision was that you think maybe a thing that came out of the Bendix shop as opposed to the Marshall shop.
See, and a lot of the beryllium on the platform buried into the platform, whereas if you made the castings of the DADC, both of them, you would have had all that beryllium showing.
Exposed,
see, the covers on the platform are not beryllium.
Yeah, the whole thing is just a big ball, as I recall seeing
it
mounted.
The covers,
in there,
the main part of it that shows is not beryllium. There's a lot of beryllium inside the platform, see. All of your gimbals are beryllium.
Okay, and so in this necessity for the rigidity and the accuracy then that made beryllium so much more attractive for the ST-124.
It's a very good material to use for gimbals. It's very lightweight, it's very strong, and they wanted accuracy. Being able to machine it and mount it and know that later it's right where you put it.
Mm-hmm.
So it worked out real good. And I don't believe the toxicity problem.
But it's a fairly small thing. It didn't weigh all that much. What was it, 196 pounds? That doesn't sound like that.
Platform?
Yeah.
170. Well,
why not?
That's for the inertial assembly.
Okay. Why not use steel? Does steel weigh that much more?
Well, let me give you a good example of why. If everybody thought that way, your weight would go up to where you wouldn't have a payload.
Okay.
There's a statement that was made that if every solder joint in the Saturn V was over-soldered to the point that it had as much solder as you could, you know, as you do in your shop at home.
Yeah.
Instead of dressing it down to the point where it's neat and lightweight joint, if you had every solder joint in Saturn build up too big, it would take away the entire payload capability of Saturn V. 37,000 pounds.
And the other thing, too, in the upper stages, it's a one-to-one trade-off, as I understand, too. So you save 30 pounds, that's exactly 30 pounds
that's
put on the
I
payload.
Say,
yeah.
It's 117 pounds for the inertial assembly. You ask the question, well, why go with 117 when you could have gone with 140, 50? Well, it's just an added
also,
thing.
Back
right?
When all that was designed, I'm not so sure how good a handle Marshall had on the
They didn't have
the capability of the vehicle. And why
what the other parts were going away too.
Way up, yeah.
Well, like that, the structure. I mean, we went all out with a honeycomb structure to make it lighter and all of this. For, you know, really, I guess it wouldn't be necessary, but if it turned out with fatal capability.
Okay, well, I have kept some of you gentlemen beyond your time. I've also got to roar off now myself and go back to an interview that was interrupted. Is there anything you can add to help the poor historian here, you think? Any comments you'd like to drop in here before I turn this thing
off? I've got a document here. I don't know if you have access to it or not. I've got a pretty good document on the guidance, navigation, and control. It goes in the platform and got pictures in here.
What year is that?
1964.
Yeah, that's also an
antique. Yeah, I was just thinking. I had pulled some pages out. I think some more current documents on the navigation.
Those are the
handbook, out of the astronautics handbook,
Anything will help.
Roger, I must go.
Okay. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Hope you help out.
If I come up with some other questions, I hope you won't mind if I pick up the phone and just call you sometime.
Here are some pages that came out of Gennevin IU. I guess I don't know your specific question.
Okay, and again, this was just kind of pulled out of a hat. I had, as I say, kind of a very limited group of documents to work with, and this is just one of the things I came across. And that particular event occurred while AS-501 was in the checkout, and there was a momentary flap about it. Whether the flap was really large and created horrendous problems, or what it was just one of the many things that, you know, that happens during checkout, I didn't know. And so I stuck it in there. Maybe it would jog somebody's memory or something.
It was a pretty large flap.
Yeah.
The problem was revealed, though, during the checkout of 503 at IBM.
Yeah.
There was a failure of the flight control computer, which was chased to a cracked solder joint in the FCC. Because of the nature of the problem, there was concern about all of the critical hardware, not just the FCC. So there was a requirement to recycle the FCC for 501, actually disassemble it, to inspect it for cracked solder joints, and to rework it by actually providing what's called microlets and top pins to, you know, strengthen the joints. But there also was a requirement to inspect other critical hardware, and we've got the details on those. Now, the problem, of course, and there's been a lot said about cracked solder joints before and after that. What happens is, because of the design, the way the components are mounted on the board, and the epoxy that's used, and the difference in the thermal coefficient, you build up stresses on the joints. And because the joints are stressed, and it causes the crack. Even though you've got a good solder joint, it cracks within the solder. There was a rather extensive exercise. In fact, I have just three documents that are associated with that activity. So there was a lot of scurrying around, a lot of rework activity that was necessary before 501 got off. Now, you also mentioned questions about the testing. I'm not sure what you're after there.
Okay. Well, again, that was just a general question because I wasn't able to find out a whole lot about the testing, and I wasn't really sure what all was involved with testing. I just didn't have any information about it.
Well,
I know that the Pulsive stages went through all kinds of testing and checkouts at MTF and everywhere else.
Well, see, that's the thing that bothered me a little bit. If you look at that document, there's just volumes and volumes of the other stages in there, and the IU is almost nothing. And as far as test program, well, of course, I didn't bring the book. Well, here it is. Here's the test plan for the IU, and this is a very high level, but there were many tests at the IU level, and then, of course, not to speak of all the qualification of hardware, etc. So we have quite a bit of detail on that. Of course, this goes back to 65. Now, what I've done, again, not being sure just what you were looking for, is I have taken some pages out of the general test plan that list the various IU level tests that were performed. And then I've also identified on a separate sheet some additional IUs that were scheduled and tested after this plan was written. And I'll give you the reason.
That sounds good, yeah.
But there were, I haven't counted them up.
Well, that sounds like it'll give me at least a start on some of this thing again, too, as I go back and review.
I would like to see if a history of Saturn comes out, I would like to see the IU get some recognition, you know, that after all, like we said, it's the brains of the vehicle, and without it, it's not going to go very far.